here, I wanted to be there. When I was there, all I could think of was getting back into the jungle. I'm here a week now. Waiting for a mission. Getting softer. Every minute I stay in this room, I get weaker. And every minute Charlie squats in the bush, he gets stronger. Each time I looked around, the walls moved in a little tighter.
You know, as I look at that and you think, oh God, that was 45 years ago. And back then, Martin Sheen was a good looking motherfucker. I mean, damn. And there he is doing the karate and he hits the mirror. And, you know, of course, the movie opens with the end, the Doors. In fact, the Doors did an interview in 2018. The Surviving Doors, where they talked about they had signed a deal with Francis Ford Coppola, and he was going to purchase all of the Doors songs to use in Apocalypse Now. Good evening. It's raining. I figured, Dr. Seuss, the rain, Apocalypse Now. The last time I watched it all the way through, it was raining. It was a long time ago. I haven't really watched Apocalypse Now all the way through in a really long time. It's one of those films where, as you watch it throughout the years, and things make more sense. Although I gotta say, you know, for me, because there's so much going on within the movie, and I've often said that the making of the film is actually a little more interesting than the actual film, but I'm gonna probably sit down and kind of reestablish that. But we have to, this is such a famous line.
Hey, punk, son. Nothing else in the world smells like that. I love the smell of napalm in the morning. You know, one time we had a hail bomb for 12 hours when it was all over, I walked up. We didn't find one of them, not one stinking dink body. Smell! You know that gasoline smell? The whole hill. Smelled like victory.
Now, according to Robert Duvall, he said that to kind of bait, not masturbate. Okay, let's get that correct here at the Dr. Seuss podcast. To bait Marlon Brando, because Marlon Brando was taking his sweet time to get to the set of Apocalypse Now. And he shows up and, well, you know, people lost their minds. And that's why the making of it is intriguing to me, because all of these things that happened, you know, Martin Sheen almost died of a heart attack and they had to keep quiet about that for the insurance purposes. Francis Ford Coppola was bleeding money during the making of Apocalypse Now. And, but the making of it, Heart of Darkness, And it was made by his wife, Mrs. Coppola. I forget her name. That's why I'm saying that. I eventually will come across it. Let me see. And then I'll correct myself because, you know, sometimes I do need correcting. oh, God. Dennis Hopper was in the film. It was a who's who of some of these actors were on their way out. Dennis Hopper had so many problems with drugs and alcohol and, you know, started out as, you know, a teenager in films. And then you've got Marlon Brando. Marlon Brando, who was this, you know, sex symbol and, you know, hey, Stella. And then what happened to Marlon Brando? And, you know, and how he purposely did that. But also, you know, all of these things that are, because people are telling him he's the best. And when people tell you the best, what do? You shatter that image. That's what he tried to do. And then you've got, I mean, a very young Lawrence Fishburne who lied about his age. There's so many things about Apocalypse Now that intrigued me. And yes, the fact that the Vietnam vets, so many of them saw so much truth and so much the brutality is right there in Apocalypse Now. Some of them won't watch it because they've already lived it. You know, I've often said there are certain things I won't watch, like the Lewinsky Clinton, you know, how American Crime Story, they did that. I won't watch it because I already lived through that. So I can understand those who have lived through war. They don't want to watch the films because it's like, okay, it's not about getting accurate. More so it's about, do you want to relive that experience? But Apocalypse Now, it was much more than your quintessential war film. It was a factoid of events.
Controversial filmmakers of all time. In 1979, his adaptation of Joseph Conrad's Heart of Darkness captured the horror of Vietnam and instantly became a classic.
My film is not a movie. My film is not about Vietnam.
C'est pas le sujet de Vietnam.
It is Vietnam.
C'est Vietnam.
It's what it was really like. It was crazy.
My greatest fear is to make a really embarrassing, pompous film on an important subject, and I am doing it.
I said, Jim, I don't know who this guy is. Who is this Willard? And Francis just looked me square in the eye, and he said, he's you.
I would have done anything. He had convinced me that this was the first film that would win a Nobel Prize, you know.
It was like you were in a dream or something, you know. It'd say scenes unknown on the call sheet. You just would show up, you know. You didn't know what they were going to do.
I was not in the greatest of shape. You know, as far as like my career was concerned, it was delightful to hear that I was going to go do anything, anywhere.
Yeah, but are they seriously saying that Marlon would take $1 million and then not show up?
I swallowed a book.
I mean, it's not in the cards that we're not going to finish the movie.
You know, I felt that he'd do whatever he had to do. He'd borrow the money, but part of me was just fearless in that regard. It really didn't matter.
It's one thing to go over there for 3 weeks with like 5 people, but if you go over there as a big Hollywood production, they're going to kill you.
The magic.
We were in the jungle. There were too many of us, and little by little we went insane.
The madness.
What are they going to say about him? What are they going to say? He was a kind man. He was a wise man. He had plans. He had wisdom.
The making of Francis Ford Coppola's Apocalypse Now.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
The questions that I kept facing, I couldn't answer. Yet I knew that I had constructed the film in such a way that to not answer would be to fail.
Hearts of Darkness. A filmmaker's apocalypse.
Look at my movie. You'll see what I'm talking.
So it was directed by Eleanor Coppola, his wife, his muse. God, this movie. I mean, everything and anything that could happen in Apocalypse Now happened. It is the stuff of, you know, I was talking to a friend and we were talking about, you know, mythologies and how in rock and roll, you know, from the death of Brian Jones to the true meanings of those Led Zeppelin songs. I remember I had a friend in high school. She always told me that Led Zeppelin songs were about the devil. And I said, no. And I had another friend who said, no, they're about Tolkien. Because, you know, if you listen to the lyrics closely, good and bad that mortals never know, you know, the Queen of Light took her light and then she turned to bow. The Prince of Thieves, you know, and it's talking about hobbits and yeah. But that was before Lord of the Rings became very, very popular. It was because of the movies. I mean, the books were already popular. Now, Apocalypse Now, oh geez, what can I say that hasn't already been said? I mean, there's so much going down. There's the different cuts. You know, as a director, you have your director's cut, and then you have the studio cut, because if you don't have the studio cut, well, they're not going to promote it, and goodbye money. And Francis Ford Coppola was already bleeding money. I mean, he put his vineyard up for, you know, I mean, everything. This was, you know, if we talk about Coppola, it was a true independent, and the studios were scared, because like, okay, here we go, you know. But, and then the cast, I mean, everything that could happen. You think about the people who were going to be cast in the film, you know. And here's, Steve McQueen was Coppola's first choice to play Willard. But McQueen did not want to leave America for 3 weeks, and Coppola was unwilling to pay his $3 million fee. Shit. When McQueen dropped out of February of 1976, Coppola had to return $5 million of the $21 million he had raised. Oh, that's a fuckover. Al Pacino was also offered the role, but he did not want to be away that long and was afraid of falling ill in the jungle, as he had done in the Dominican Republic during the shooting of The Godfather 2. Jack Nicholson, Robert Redford, and James Caan were approached to play either Kurtz or Willard. Keith Carradine, Tommy Lee Jones, Nick Nolte, oh shit, Frederick Forrest were all considered for Willard. In a 2015 Hollywood Reporter interview, Clint Eastwood revealed that Coppola offered him the role of Willard, but much like McQueen and Pacino, he did not want to be away from America for a long time. He also revealed that McQueen tried to convince him to play Willard. McQueen wanted to play Kurtz because he would have to work for only 2 weeks. Coppola offered the lead role of Willard to Robert De Niro, but he declined due to other commitments. Coppola also offered the role of Colonel Kurtz to Orson Welles, oh geez, Lee Marvin, and both of whom turned it down. Coppola and Roose had been impressed by Martin Sheen's screen test for Michael in The Godfather, and he became the second choice to play Willard. But he had already accepted another project. Harvey Keitel was cast in the role based on his work in Martin Scorsese's Mean Streets. By early 1976, Coppola had persuaded Brando to play Kurtz for a fee of $2 million for a month's work on location in September 1976. Brando also received 10% of the theatrical rental gross and 10% of the TV sale rights. Oh, he was smart. Earning him around $9 million. Damn. Jeez, Brando. You were a genius. Hackman was set to play Wyatt Kenedge, who would later become Kilgore, played by Robert Duvall. Dennis Hopper was cast as the war correspondent and observer of Kurtz. When Coppola heard Hopper talking nonstop on location, he remembered putting the cameras and the monotard shirt on him and shooting the scene where he greets them on the boat. James Caan was the first choice to play Colonel Lucas, but Caan wanted too much money for what he was considered a minor part, and Harrison Ford was cast instead. Before departing for principal photography, Coppola took an advertisement in the trade press, declaring Keitel, Duvall, and others as the first choices for the film. It also listed other actors who did not appear in the film, including Harry Dean Stanton, Bobby Benson, and Michael Leonard. Sam Bottoms, Larry Fishburne, and Albert Hall all signed 7-year deals with Coppola, including acting training for their choice in their deal. Bottoms, who was infected with hookworm while filming in the Philippines, and Parasite wrecked his liver. Robert Englund auditioned for the role. Can you believe that? Freddy Krueger auditioned for the role of Lance Johnson. Okay, Freddy Krueger. March 1976, Coppola and his family flew to Manila and rented a large house where they planned the 4-month shoot. Sound and photography equipment had been coming in from California since late 1975. John Ashley assisted with the production in the Philippines. The film was due to be released on Coppola's 38th birthday, April 7th, 1977. Yeah, that didn't happen. Because, like all things, oh shit. Here's what happened. On March 5th that year, Sheen, then only 36, had a near-fatal heart attack and struggled for a quarter of a mile to reach help. By then, the film was so over budget, Sheen worried about that funding would be halted if word about his condition reached investors, and he claimed that he suffered heat stroke instead. Until he returned on the set on April 19th, his brother Joe Estevez filled in for him, providing voiceovers for his character. Coppola later admitted that he could no longer tell which scenes were of Joe or Martin. A sequence in a French plantation cost hundreds of thousands of dollars but was cut from the film. Rumors began to circulate that Apocalypse Now had several endings, but Richard Beggs, who had worked on the sound elements, said there was never five endings, but it was just one. Even if there were different edited versions, these rumors came from Coppola departing frequently from the original screenplay. Coppola admitted that he had no ending because Brando was too fat to play the scenes as written in the original script. With that help of Dennis Jacob, Coppola decided the ending would be a classic myth of the murderer who gets up the river, kills the king, and then himself becomes king. It's the Fisher King from The Golden Bow. Principal photography ended on May 21st, 1977, after 238 days. Oh, shit. I'm laughing because this whole mythology of Apocalypse Now and what went down on this very mythological movie, and anything and everything that happened, okay? Everything. And it created this, I mean, even still to this day, people talk about Apocalypse Now, and they talk about, you know, not just the film itself, with the making of the film, because of all these different things that it conjured. Think of everything that it conjured. You're talking about the Vietnam War. You're talking about actors that almost died on the set. You're talking about typhoons ruining the set. I mean, it was a whole shitload of things. And it's talking about a subject that was very fresh. The Vietnam War, you know, had just recently, I mean, ended, or you know, people started coming home, and those who didn't come home, and I mean, and this all took place in 1969, the story itself, when things were just, shit was really hitting the fan, not just the fan in the hotel room where Martin Sheen's character just, I mean, that's an epic moment right there. And I remember watching that in high school, and you know, and then the scenes with the helicopters, and we're all watching it, and everyone's cheering, and the teacher's telling people to be quiet, because, you know, teenage boys, you know, we're 16, 17 years old. How old was I when we watched this in class? I was already 18, shit. And what's funny is, and I remember this, we watched it around the time I had to interview someone in my family who had served in Vietnam. And then we had to watch the movie. And then, this was like Super Bowl weekend. I remember it. And then I was approached by the Marines. And I remember that. And it was so eerie how, you know how things kind of happen in succession? And I was 18. And I remember because I had like a little weight thing in my room. And I was working out and everything. I could never figure that thing out. I didn't really take it seriously until my 20s. But, and I remember there was a gentleman who was on the high school campus, and, you know, there's the ASVAB and all that. And one of my classmates was going to willingly join the Marines. And his mother and I worked together in the library because I was, you know, when you're a junior and a senior, you know, you're offered the role of TA. You're either a teacher's assistant or you work in different parts of the school. Like I would work in the library, and then if they had nothing for me, they would loan me out to the office, which I hated because I had to answer phones, and it's like, yeah. But I was only 17, so. But I remember working in the library, and her son was going to willingly go. Now, he has since passed away. He died in an accident, I believe, in 2001, and it was very sad, and she's such a sweet lady, and I enjoyed working with her, and I think of her often. She was like a mother to me. So the gentleman calls me, and he's, you know, the recruiter, and he's talking, and he's not letting me get a word in edgewise. And I'm 18 years old, you know, so it's like, oh, okay, you know. When you turn 18, it's like, oh, you get the card and selected service, and, you know, it's like, oh, geez, what do I do now? And so I remember he's talking and talking and talking and talking and talking. And I'm just listening to him. He's like, I'm going to come pick you up. I'm going to take you to the base and everything. He's not letting me say no, okay? And I'm 18, and I've never had someone talk to me like that before. I was like, all right. So then my father overhears. My father's a Vietnam vet, and he's like, as is my uncle, you're not going with him. What you talking about? And I thought, and I wanted to say, well, isn't that, you know, I'm out of your hair, you know, isn't that what you want? And he's like, no. He comes on this property. It's not going to happen, man. Oh, okay. And he started to tell me what, you know, you don't need to do that. I reserve for all three of you. I don't want you doing that. Oh, okay. Because, you know, a part of me was like, hey, you know, maybe this is my ticket. But then at the same time, you know, now that I know what I know, I'm sure my father probably had a premonition, like a war was coming, and if he signs up, he's dead. Or I'd come back with, like, getting fucked up in the head and stuff like that. I already have PTSD, but it's not due to war. It's due to car accidents and other things. But, yeah. So, you know, isn't that weird that, you know, that week we watch Apocalypse Now in class. I have to write a paper. I have to interview my father on Vietnam. My mother filled in the blanks because he just, that was too fresh. That was like 30 years. No. And I understood that. And here I am faced with being, you know, asked to serve. And it's like, yeah. And a part of me was like, oh, you know, I get to see the world. And then he's telling us, no, you think that, but they're going to own you, man. They're going to break you. They're going to own you forever. I say, oh, I don't want to be owned. Huh. You know, so there's that. And there's all these different things, you know, that are kind of running through your head versus those who were drafted. Those who were drafted, that was some scary ass shit. And to hear them talk about it when your number comes up, okay, you know, and it's like playing bingo. In fact, there's a scene in Girl Interrupted where this one girl is playing bingo each time someone's draft is getting called. It's, I mean, just think if your draft is getting called, and it's like, shit, there you go. You're going to go into a rice paddy with a gun and boom, you're either going to die or you're going to come back fucked up. Okay. So Apocalypse Now, the whole representation of it and how honest and how brutal and how jarring and jugular it was. I mean, all these different things to describe this film that just really, you know, I'm not going to play the famous scenes because I feel that smell of napalm and, well, you know what? We're going to put Brando in there because I did study acting and, I mean, Brando just did it his way, you know? Brando was just one of those actors where he could get away with all kinds of shit. And he did, you know, he was legendary. He was legendary for these moments. And to have him and Martin Sheen, you know, I'm sure Martin Sheen, even to this day, you know, to that, the fact he got to work with, you know, Marlon Brando, who was notorious for ad-libbing and always trying to find his lines. Here we go.
They say, why, Willard? Why they want to dominate my command? I was sent on a classified mission, sir. No longer classified. Did they tell you? They told me that you had gone totally insane. And that your methods were unsound. Are my methods unsound? I don't see any method at all, sir.
Well,
pick someone like you. What did you expect? Are you an assassin? I'm a soldier. You're neither. You're an errand boy sent by grocery clerks to collect a bill.
See how he says that line? That's pure Marlon Brando. Now, you know he's probably looking at a big poster of it because that's what he was known for, you know. I mean, if you look at photos from The Godfather and Robert Duvall is wearing his lines or Brando's lines in his shirt. I mean, you know, that's what Brando was known for. And I played that because, you know, that's a famous line. You're neither. You are errand boy sent by grocery clerks to collect a bill. Now, I can't say it like Brando says it. You know, Brando, that's Brando's je ne sais quoi. You know what I mean? That's what Brando... that's what Brando did best. So this film, I mean, 45 fucking years of Apocalypse Now. It's just wild. It's one of those films that gets better with age. I mean, we all, you know, that's the thing. Do we get better with age? Well, I think we get more mindful. And at some point I would love to just sit and watch it again when I'm able to just watch movies again and just kind of free flow and everything, you know. But this whole thing, you know, of the Vietnam War, I mean, we've never had a president that served in the Vietnam War, you know. It still leaves such a stink in the fabric of time, you know, and everything that happened. So, and then this world that we're living in now, you know, and this, are we going to go to war with these countries and everything? And I was recently asked by some students in high school who said to me, a bunch of them want to join the Marines. And I'm like, hey, that's what you want to do. You got the GI Bill. You know, this is what you want. Okay. As long as this is what you want, not what others want. Okay. Or if your family's trying to stop you, I said, you know, you got to make a decision. That's what you want to do. Okay. Because, you know, all these incentives that they get and everything. But then they also think of the frightening aspect of coming back and, you know, PTSD and all these other things or being injured. When life hits you right there, especially in the military. And one of them said to me, if there was a war, and they're like, you're 43 years old. And I'm like, yeah. Even though, you know, it's like, oh, we can't have him serve. He's too old, you know, but he's fit. Well, if they asked me and said, look, you know, we're going to open the draft back up. We want you. Okay. I said to their surprise, I said, oh, yeah, I totally would. And they're like, really? I said, well, yeah, what have I got to lose at this point, you know, to do it? So there was that. And then one of them said, oh, yeah, you'd get to see Russia and everything. I said, well, I do like vodka. So, but yeah, to have them kind of bring that up. And I loved their response. Or no, they're kind of looking at me with my response like, really? You're not scared? And I said, no, why would I be? And they were like, a bunch of them said, yeah, but anything can happen and we're younger than you. And we're scared of it. I said, I'm not. Because I said, at this point, what have I got to lose? You're going to be thrust into that. And it's like, oh, okay, you know. And also, you know, I said to them, you think of my frontal lobe. It's all fused together. So there are certain decisions that I could make that all of you could not make in that whole restraint thing of... being out there in the middle of nowhere, and it's like, okay, we're going to war here, we got to do this, we got to check each box, and, you know, because, you know, you've got, they're all running around, they're 18 and 19 and 20 years old, and you're the adults, okay, We got to stop playing ball now. No more. Smells like napalm. Smells like victory. We got to get on this. We got to get on that. You know, you got to have the adult to call the shots. More ways than one. So Apocalypse Now, as we turn right back around to this, I mean, the fact that Coppola is still with us. I think Coppola is making another film that's slated to come out. But you think of all the people that were attached to Apocalypse Now. Robert Duvall is still with us. Coppola. The cinematographer is no longer Victoria Storolo. You know, when you search, it's the wonderful world of Google. When you search Apocalypse Now, here's what's coming up: Platoon, Full Metal Jacket, and The Godfather. You know, because of course Coppola and his good friend George Lucas and Martin Scorsese and even Steven Spielberg owned the 1970s, and even Brian De Palma. In terms of this, I've said this before on this show, you know, that was the second golden age of film. The first golden age of film was the beginning of film. And here you are in the 1970s, and you can say whatever you want in film. You know, there is no censorship of language or situations or sexuality. And Coppola really ran with that, and it's full packed into Apocalypse Now. I mean, you know, written by John Millis and Francis Ford Coppola. I mean, the cast alone, you got Marlon Brando, Robert Duvall, Martin Sheen, Frederick Forrest, Albert Hall, Sam Bottoms, Lawrence Fishburne, Harrison Ford, Dennis Hopper. The fact that you've got Dennis Hopper. Oh, jeez. I loved Hopper. Hopper was, you know, even Coppola has said that in a way he was doing Hopper a favor, because Hopper himself even says in the clip that I played, he was not in the best shape physically or mentally to be in a film. You know, here he was, you think about it, that was 10 years after Easy Rider. Easy Rider was his directorial debut. You know, it made him and Peter Fonda very, very famous counterculture icons. And here he is 10 years later and playing this character in Apocalypse Now. And yeah, I mean, it's just one of those films. I'm not going to go into the whole Rotten Tomatoes shit because, you know, who cares? Who cares? It kind of, I've said this before, you know, critics make or break a film. But with Apocalypse Now, I mean, like I've said, the making of it really is the meat and cheese of film. Everything that happened, a death almost happened, fights, money, you know, Orson Welles almost happened. Oh, jeez. It would have been basically Citizen Kane meets Apocalypse Now. And I don't think that's what everyone wanted. So, Apocalypse Now, 45 years later, you know, there's been reduxes. It's always interesting because when they chop a film up, you know, an example of that is, you know, I took photography, and, you know, when you're in that dark room and you have to crop a film, I never liked cropping the pictures. And here's why: because you are bastardizing it. You are basically circumcising it. And so that's why when, you know, we watch films on TV and it's formatted to fit your screen, because it's been circumcised. It's basically been cut up, not in a very good way. Where when you watch it in the full view of the, you know, widescreen and everything, and the black bars. I remember, you know, when DVDs were first coming about and people wanted it in full screen, they didn't want it in widescreen. Well, that's the aspect ratio of a film, you know, and that really started in the late 1950s because television had taken over and they wanted a way to draw people back to the films. It's like, yeah, TV's got you, but you know what? We're going to give you something a little extra, CinemaScope. And so that's what they did. They gave us some CinemaScope. It became known as widescreen. So, I mean, when it comes to films, I mean, you look at what Coppola really was not about making consolations. He was not about making compromises. He either did it or he didn't do it. And so that is the whole representation of Apocalypse Now, the whole presentation of that film. It is a long, long film. You know, and it has so many wires and, you know, warts and all that are encased within this legendary moment in film. I mean, it did very well. I mean, think if it had not done well, everyone associated their career would be over, you know, because back then it was, you know, $4 million or $10 million is a lot. Now it's like, nah. You know, give us about 22 million and just shoot, or 200 million or 300. You know, it's not a Lord of the Rings production, okay? But you know, that's what happens when we make films, and especially now, you know, things are more things like I said, anything and everything can happen. And, yeah, I mean, it's a film that is very searing and visceral, and it doesn't leave your mind, and it's good to talk about it. It's good to talk about a film that, you know, as brutal as it is, and the acting, you know, I mean, think of how it opened. It opens with, you know, Martin Sheen naked, looking at himself in the mirror. And then you see the behind the scenes of how Coppola is directing him, you know, and looking at himself in the mirror and then breaking the mirror and then blood and then he's screaming and then he's doing all these different things. And I believe that also was, okay. So Martin Sheen, alcoholism. Yeah, that was the other thing. You know, when you make a film, what happens is, you know, this happened to Mercedes McCambridge. Mercedes McCambridge, when she was getting, there's a point to this, okay? Just like the great late Bill Hicks once said, there's a point to everything. Mercedes McCambridge, when they were going to do The Exorcist, and she's got to do the demon voice, and she had to have her priest because she was an alcoholic. Not a former. She was an alcoholic. She, you know, she said, you're once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. And she had to have her priest on set because she was going to get off the, you know, she was going to not be clean anymore. She was going to start drinking just for the film. Okay. And putting her sobriety down for a bit. Now, according to this, Martin Sheen got dangerously drunk filming Apocalypse Now scene on his birthday. And if we go into it, yeah, because Martin Sheen, from what I read, was an alcoholic. And, you know, that kind of scared him. It's like, okay, I'm going to dive deep into this. So according to BuzzFeed, he said, when I went very deep into my own personal pain and alcoholism and self-loathing and all the things that make up of a human being, Sheen said, describing how his intent was on portraying Willard as a dangerous, unpredictable man. At the penultimate moment in the scene, Willard punches a mirror. That was an accident, as Sheen revealed, explaining how he was closer to the mirror than he realized. While Coppola wanted to stop filming after Sheen's hand started bleeding, the actor insisted on continuing the scene. And so I did, and I just showed a completely broken, desperate guy, which was a reflection of who I was at the time, Sheen said. And Sheen went on to fight his alcohol addictions for years. He had several unpleasant run-ins with other performers during that time, including... Okay. But yeah, you know, for Apocalypse Now, think of everything that was on the table. And think of everything that was at risk and at play within this. You know, when you're making a film, it's, you know, and back in the day, you know, we would make films, student films, and you're playing with your friends, you know, someone has the camera and someone's going to stand over there and pretend to shoot a rocket out their butt, okay? Or in my case, I was in a student film and I shaved my head. not for Marlon Brando, but for my cousin, because he was the director. And then we had our cameraman. We went out to the hills near the Altamont to film. You got rattlesnakes and all kinds of shit. We took a chain off the chainsaw. We put some in the 110 degree heat, and we put ketchup all over. I remember it very. That was 10 years ago. Shit, we put ketchup all over the chainsaw. I've got a freshly shaved head. It's hot. I had to wear like a coat, and then I had to put the chainsaw. We turned it on, and then put it towards the camera. That's all I remember. And then we had to do several takes of that. And we had to do several. But see, that's what I mean about playing with your friends. You get to pretend to be filmmakers. And then when there's money on the table, what was the budget for that film? Well, I told my cousin to buy me lunch. So I think it was a drink and a hamburger? No, I think it was just a drink because I was going to eat later that day. But it was fun, you know, it was one of those things. And if you think of when there's a lot of money on the table, Francis Ford Coppola, and you've put it into this film, and it's not just about play. Now it's about, okay, everyone's got to have their lines memorized, or in Brando's case, hold up the cue card, because if you don't, we're in trouble. Because he's just like, I don't feel like performing today. My cards are not ready. And, you know, I mean, the grocery clerk and the bill and everything, and, you know, and Duvall is making fun of me. He probably would say that. He's baiting me with smells like victory. And, yeah, you know, that's what happens. You have all these different personalities on the set of a film coming together. And it's a possession of sorts. It really is The Exorcist. It is a possession, because when you are an actor and you come up with a role, as I used to say, when they'd say to me, I had a friend and she was like, how do you just go into it? I said, you know what I do? I pretend I'm dead. And I was just like, I just pretend that, okay, it's not me talking. I'm possessed. Now, I said that to someone once and they actually thought I was possessed. And I said, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. And they were like, you watch The Exorcist too much. And I said, yeah, I did. I watched it way. I enjoyed that film, but we're not talking about The Exorcist. We're talking about Apocalypse Now. A very searing, striking, disturbing film about the Vietnam War, about Vietnam itself, all the madness. You know, I mean, everything that happened, happened. And you can't go back on that. You know, it's not like you can just, okay, let's switch this up, you know? No. It happened, okay? To quote Elizabeth Taylor and Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, it happened. It did. It happened. And the human condition and what war does to people, and I've never been in a war. And if, you know, we go back to 25 years ago, when I almost, you know, like I said, I probably would if nobody had been home and overheard that conversation between me and that recruiter, I'd probably either be dead or it'd probably be a different scenario. But someone heard that phone conversation and was like, no, you're not going with him. Okay, you call him back. I don't know how to call him back. We didn't have star 69. All right, well, I knew how to use it, but so, you know what I mean? And so, yeah, things could have happened differently. I wouldn't be talking to you right now, or I would, but probably in a different context, you know, all these things called timelines, wonderful timelines. But Francis Ford Coppola and all of his cast got together all those years ago to make a very searing and disturbing film about war, people, conditions, brutality, murder, victory, and Marlon Brando saying, I want $2 million or there's no deal. And how smart he was to say, look, I'm going to profit from the gross. And, you know, that's like Robert Downey Jr. with the whole Iron Man thing. And how really the money that he made off of the licensing and the merchandise, and he, you know, I'm sure him and Brando taught him a thing or two. Brando taught a lot of things. So this is Dr. Zeus talking to you finally about a film. It was suggested to me by a friend of mine to just do what you do best. Do what you do best and bring them back in. Bring the audience back in because that's what they want. They're salivating, you know, because I was going to do something different. And I thought, nah. You know, I was going to talk about some funny shit that happened because as Carrie Fisher once said, if my life wasn't funny, it would just be true. You know, I was going to talk about Uber and things that I've had to Uber over the years. Things that when I tell people what I've had to Uber and they're like, no, you didn't. Yeah, I did. And I'll end tonight before we go into Apocalypse Now and just go night. They were like, you did not. And I said, yeah. Did you at least put clothes on? Yes, I did. Because I'm not going to receive the Uber like that. That's just not how I roll. You know, it's like the UPS man in the package. I don't think so. No, not happening. I don't want to get in trouble. So 45 years ago, Apocalypse Now, the amazing Francis Ford Coppola, Martin Sheen, and his brother Joe, and the voiceovers, and everything that could happen, happened. They went to Manila. They went to all these different parts. They endured typhoons, heart attacks, Brando, Robert Duvall, and a very young Lawrence Fishburne, who would go on to play Ike Turner. Remember that? Oh, yeah. I would love to, if I ever get a chance to meet Lawrence Fishburne, I'm going to ask him, okay, tell me some Apocalypse Now stories that nobody else knows. Because those are the fun stories that actors witness, you know, that, well, I can talk about it now because, you know, certain people are gone. But yeah, think of all the people that are involved in that film, okay? So as always, cut it.